To this day, the distinctive buildings that you see when you walk down the lower half of Broadway in Manhattan, from the big 10 and 15-story industrial warehouses that run for 20 blocks below Times Square to the cast-iron lofts of Soho and Tribeca, were almost all built to house coat makers and hat makers and lingerie manufacturers and huge rooms of men and women hunched over sewing machines. To come to New York City in the 1890s with a background in dressmaking or sewing or Schnittwarenhandlung was a stroke of extraordinary good fortune. It was like showing up in Silicon Valley in 1986 with 10,000 hours of computer programming already under your belt. There is no doubt that those Jewish immigrants arrived at the perfect time with the perfect skills, says the sociologist Steven Steinberg. To exploit that opportunity, you had to have certain virtues, and those immigrants worked hard. They sacrificed, they scrimped and saved and invested wisely, but still, you have to remember that the garment industry in those years was growing by leaps and bounds. The economy was desperate for the skills that they possessed. Louis and Regina Borgenicht and the thousands of others who came over on the boats with them were given a golden opportunity, and so were their children and grandchildren, because the lessons those garment workers brought home with them in the evenings turned out to be critical for getting ahead in the world. The day after Louis and Regina Borgenicht sold out their first lot of 40 aprons, Louis made his way to H.B. Claflin & Company. Claflin was a dry goods commission house, the equivalent of Brandstatter's back in Poland. There, Borgenicht asked for a salesman who spoke German, since his English was almost non-existent. He had in his hand his and Regina's life savings, $125, and with that money, he bought enough cloth to make 10 dozen aprons. Day and night, he and Regina cut and sewed. He sold all 10 dozen in 2 days. Back he went to Claflin for another round. They sold those too. Before long, he and Regina hired another immigrant just off the boat to help with the children so Regina could sew full-time, and another to serve as an apprentice. Louis ventured uptown as far as Harlem, selling to the mothers in the tenements. He rented a storefront on Sheriff Street with living quarters in the back. He hired 3 more girls and bought sewing machines for all of them. He became known as the Apron Man. He and Regina were selling aprons as fast as they could make them. Before long, the Borgenichs decided to branch out. They started making adult aprons, then petticoats, then women's dresses. By January of 1892, the Borgenichs had 20 people working for them, mostly immigrant Jews like themselves. They had their own factory in the Lower East Side of Manhattan and a growing list of customers, including a store uptown owned by another Jewish immigrant family, the Bloomingdale brothers. Keep in mind, the Borgenichs had only been in the country for 3 years at this point. They barely spoke English, and they weren't rich yet by any stretch of the imagination. Whatever profit they made got plowed back into their business, and Borgenicht says he only had $200 in the bank, but already he was in charge of his own destiny. This was the second great advantage of the garment industry. It wasn't just that it was growing by leaps and bounds. It was also explicitly entrepreneurial. Clothes weren't made in a single big factory. Instead, a number of established firms designed patterns and prepared the fabric, and then the complicated stitching and pressing and button attaching was all sent out to small contractors. And if a contractor got big enough, or ambitious enough, he started designing his own patterns and preparing his own fabric.